is all that I can be. And maybe one day God will show me what I need. Right now, I'm not so sure about myself. Will I ever turn and face myself and learn to fly? I've always heard that mirrors never lie, but that's not true because I see a man but feel a child. There are some of us who can hear a voice inside, a truthful voice that says, yes, you were born to fly, you were born to fly. We were born to fly.
Aloha, I am your
host. We were born to fly. So was I.
Mahalo to all the listeners of BDSRadio.com. Our call-in numbers are USA 888-228-4494 or 877-489-6350. Our direct lines, same area code, is 530-776-5185 and 876-9916. Our today's topic is Spot of Grace. And I'm really thrilled to introduce to all of you that are tuned in to the Universal Spiritual Connection, our guest for this evening. I am personally thrilled and very honored to have her with us this evening. And boy, has she got a lot of wonderful information to share with each and every one of you this evening. And I'd like to invite all of you to my show page at bbsradio.com. You can literally follow the show format tonight as we unfold the show this evening, and I have a wealth of information about our guest for this evening. But before we invite her onto the show, please allow me to share this wonderful, wonderful information about our guest for this evening. She is an inspirational speaker and writer, Donna Markova. PhD is internationally known for her groundbreaking work in helping people learn with passion and live on purpose. She is the CEO of Professional Thinking Partners, a group of consultants whose expertise lies in the expansion of human capacity. Her clients include CEOs, senior leaders of several Fortune 500 companies, including Xerox, Royal Dutch Shell, Ford, and EDF, and many, many more, including the government of Nigeria, the Canadian healthcare. Along with addition, she has worked with many nonprofit organizations, including foundations and school systems around the world. And before I continue sharing so much more wealth of information with all of you, I'd like to share her website with all of you at this time, and that is www.spotofgrace.com. As a popular keynote speaker at business and educational conferences around the globe, last year alone she spoke to over 1,100,000 in 8 countries, on a wide range of topics, including organizational learning, living with cancer, and empowering individuals, groups, and nations, a long-term cancer survivor. Let's all welcome Donna to the show.
Mahalo.
Mahalo to you. It is a real honor. And wow, where did you get your energy, young lady? I guess it's because I love being alive. That gives me a lot of energy. Life brings the energy. I just have to welcome it, open the door to it, and use it well.
Yes, absolutely. Because, you know, each day when we wake up, there's just this wonderful exploration of life, a celebration of life. And it's so well known that you yourself have touched so many, many people around the world and literally have healed so many hearts. And that is very refreshing to me, Donna.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, there was a time when I was about 30 years old, and I'm now 66, when everybody was trying to get me to live longer. I had a form of cancer, and I was told that it was a term. I was told I was terminally ill, and even now to use those words, it's hard for me to say them. And people wanted me to live longer, but at that time, I didn't know why I would want to live longer because I wasn't living very deeply. I wasn't enjoying my life. And so living a mediocre life longer didn't make a lot of sense to me. So it's been a long journey, you know, as you say that and you call me young lady. And I think, well, sometimes I feel like a very old, old, old soul, at least. And my spirit, however, that energy that I have now, I love life and I love being alive and I love sharing that with people.
And so it was extremely appropriate when I said a celebration of life.
Perfect. Perfect.
And I love when you shared with all of us tonight about living life deeply. What a profound statement to make. I love it. And I'm going to remember that every day when I greet our sunrise.
Yes.
Well, I wanted to share very quickly because you have written many books, and I'd like to share those titles with our listeners this evening before we get deeper into sharing our thoughts with the listeners tonight. And what I find fascinating, especially with the titles, and you know, Donna, I'm going to get some copies of these books because I'm amazed over the titles that you have chosen. And these books are called I Will Not Die, An Unlived Life. And I'd like to repeat that again.
Mm-hmm.
I Will Not Die, An Unlived Life. The other books are called The Art of the Possibility, The Open Mind, No Enemies Within, An Unused Intelligence, How Your Child Is Smart, and Learning Unlimited. Great titles.
We have one more that was called The Smart Parenting Revolution.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad you brought that forward. And tonight's show, we're also going to be touching and talking about your new book that has come out, Spot of Grace. Is that correct?
Yes. These are all my children. This is my newest baby.
Oh, that's wonderful. I would like to share even some further information, as Donna is one of the editors of the Random Acts of Kindness series. She has helped launch a national movement to help counter America's crisis of violence, a former board member of the Visions for a Better World Foundation. So, Donna, tell us a little bit about the Random Acts of Kindness.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I believe, and I was taught by my grandmother, that everything in the world that is natural balances. That sunrise, there is a sunset. But there was a time when all I was hearing in the media was about random acts of violence. And it didn't make sense to me because it was like, what's the balancing structure for that? And then I read in a newspaper about this woman, Ann Herbert, who would pay people's tolls that were behind her when she would drive across the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco. And when she was interviewed about why she did that, she said, it's a random act of kindness, a senseless gift of beauty. And I read that and I went like that. I kind of gasped. And I said, there's the balancing structure. If there are random acts of violence, there must be random acts of kindness. So I began to ask people,
to tell me stories about who in their life had done random acts of kindness for them, strangers, people they didn't know, or what were times when they had done random acts of kindness for other people. And I would have parties where I would just ask people to start telling each other stories. And, you know, in Hawaii, you talk story, and I spend a lot of time in Hawaii, so I got a lot of people talking story. And I started collecting the stories, and then I asked my friends to have parties like that. And before you knew it, we collected all the stories. It was 6 weeks is all it took, into this little book. And then the book started growing, and it was the right time, and there were other people who, like me, who were sick of hearing about random acts of violence and also wanted a balancing structure. So before you knew it, there was literally a revolution. The book had sold, I forget how many copies, over 2 million copies. The proceeds all went to the AIDS Foundation. Then we created a kids' random acts of kindness book. And I think now there's 14 countries in the world that have national random acts of kindness days. I don't know. The movement took off by itself, as it should. And it was a very easy thing to do, to create this little revolution of angels. And stories connect people. We need the stories. They are the connective tissue of our species. And stories particularly that encourage us to reach towards each other, I think, are medicine that we all need these days.
You bet we do. With you sharing this with me has really touched my heart. And it's wonderful to know that Hawaii played a very small part in a larger scheme of touching so many lives.
Yes.
Tradition that I grew up with, let's talk stories.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Hawaii has...
foresight you have.
It has always been the home of my heart. And cancer has come in my life 3 times. And each time I have gone to Hawaii to ask myself the difficult questions I need to ask myself to find my healing way. And it's always been, in Kauai particularly, has been, you know, people would leave bananas on our front door. And the first time we went, we didn't have very much money, and we rented an empty apartment, and we lived with cardboard boxes and plastic knives and forks, but we were among such wealth. And the people of Hawaii became my family, and that continues to be the case.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Yes,
yeah.
Because we have that about us, and, you know, it's really interesting, Donna, because I came here to the mainland, And I'm genuinely a very kind person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And for a long time when I came, you know, I had to find, you know, I started suppressing that because I learned right away that that wasn't necessarily embraced.
Yes.
I woke up one day and said, you know what, I have to be who I am, regardless of what anyone thinks.
Mm-hmm.
It's important for me to express that love, that kindness, that respect, and honoring all peoples, no matter where they're from.
That's right. That's right.
And that's where it leads us to this wonderful book you have written, Spot of Grace. What was your largest inspiration?
Well, you know, it's interesting, Leilani. I wrote the book for 2 reasons. My grandmother was my inspiration for the book, and I'll tell you a story that she told me. But the other inspiration for the book was that my sister 2 years ago was diagnosed with a terminal brain tumor. And so for 2 years, I went and sat by her side, and she couldn't speak. She was very much of a vegetable, and I would hold her hand, and I would just tell her stories like I learned to do in Hawaii. And I told her stories about the ways that she mattered to me. And my sister taught me to see beauty in the world. And so when she died last June, I knew that I had a choice. And the choice that I was taught in my family of origin, my sister was my last member of my family of origin, and in that family, when someone died, you just shut down, you isolated yourself. But in the family of my heart, in my Hawaiian family, I remember that what people did when someone died was you inhaled their last breath, their spirit. And so when my sister died, I had her spirit running through me. And I didn't want to isolate myself. I wanted to connect. And so what I did was send out an email to all the people on my mailing list saying, who was it in your life who helped you know that you mattered? Who was it in your life where you recognized their spot of grace? Send me your stories. And in the beginning, I got responses like, what do you mean? I'm not unique. I'm just one of 7 billion people, you know. But then people started passing the email to other people and other people and other people. And they passed it around the world until literally I had a flood of stories, well over 1,000 stories. So that was one major inspiration. I collected 100. I selected 100 of those stories and put them together in this book, which became Spot of Grace. The other inspiration for the book was the story that I grew up with from my grandmother. And my grandmother was a midwife and a healer. She had 11 children, and they lived in a very tiny two-bedroom apartment in a place in New York called Hell's Kitchen. And every Sunday, my father would bring me to her, and she would kiss my fingertips, and she'd point to the fingerprints at the end of my fingertips, and she'd say, never before in all the history of humankind has there been another one with marks like these, and never again will there be. These are proof that you are unique. These are proof that you have inside you a gift, and your job is to find it and grow it and bring it to the rest of the world. And I'd say to her, but Grandma, where did that seed come from? And she'd say, once upon a time, there was a bowl of light in the sky, a huge bowl of light. And one day, for reasons that no one knew, the bowl shattered into a million gazillion tiny, teeny seeds of light. And one was planted inside each living being on this earth. And she said, someday, each of us will find our seed of light and we will bring them out into the world and the bowl will be made whole again. Your job is to find it, to grow it,
you know, I
and to give it.
The word so deeply. Mm. It's incredible how it's just really touching my heart.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't normally get very emotional on my radio show. When words are spoken with such passion, such love, as you and I both know, it creates this incredible ripple effect throughout
Indeed.
Our universe.
Indeed.
Oh, my goodness. It is wonderful to be able to sit and talk stories with
yes.
you.
Yes, yes, yes.
Tell us about the children's lives that you have been touching worldwide. One of my favorite passions is the children of our world today.
Well, you know, it's interesting because whenever we can, we go back to Hawaii and to Kauai in particular, and we always go to the high school in Kauai as our way of giving back because so much is given to us. And mostly what I'm there to do and mostly what I want to do with kids is what my grandmother did when she kissed my fingerprints. I help kids recognize the way, the unique way that their mind processes information. Because every child is like a musical instrument, and you don't play a guitar the same way you play a piano. But our assumption is that all minds are played in the same way. And so if you have a child whose mind is played like a guitar, and they try and make music by hitting it the way you would on a piano, they think there's something wrong with them. And we live, unfortunately, in a time when most children are in what I call a deficit-focused world. Part of why I wrote Spot of Grace was that I was so tired of hearing about children's deficits and disorders and disabilities. To me, every child is a treasure. And we have to make the world worthy of that treasure. And one of the things you have to do is then recognize what that child's innate and unique assets are, their strategies of success, their mind patterns, their attractions to things they love, their resources, and their thinking talents, the way that they approach a problem really well and really successfully. So what I want everyone to know about kids is to have a vocabulary and a way of recognizing and developing and teaching kids to utilize these assets, as it were, these strengths, these gifts and talents.
Wow. And you know, that's a real important element that you brought forth, because as I was sitting and recapping on my own childhood, that's how my mind, my emotions, my heart functioned.
Mm-hmm.
Was a language of music.
Yes.
And it's not any different than any child across the globe.
Correct. And yet it is also unique.
Yes,
so my husband, when I first met him, he thought there was something wrong with him. He said, "I'm a little slow." I said, "Good, I'm a little fast. Maybe together we can balance." But he said, "Well, the truth is that English is not my native language. It's my second language." And I said, "Andy, what's your native language?" Thinking he would say, "I don't know, French or something." He said, "Music. I think in music." So I'm always translating experiences I have into music. And now he's a composer. Now he recognizes that as his gift, not his deficit or his disability.
That's right. And you know, it's amazing because even with my own creativity as an adult, I see in terms of music, you know, and one of the abilities that I had is I was able to see music notes. I could actually hear tones that most could not hear.
Amazing.
And so I feel that through music. I feel that through even color as well.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because, you know, we've lost a part of that in our communication at many different levels with our children, haven't we?
Yes. I think the sadness for me is this deficit focus we have. If you watch a baby when they learn, you come to recognize the way we're all wired. So a baby goes to reach for a cup, and the baby gets hair, mommy's hair, and then the baby gets air, and then the baby gets oatmeal, and then the baby gets cup. And then the baby gets oatmeal, cup, cup, cup. We're wired to track our successes and discard our failures. But what happens as soon as we get into school, if not sooner, unfortunately, is we're told that we got 16 wrong on the spelling test. We're taught to track our failures and discard our successes. And in tracking our failures, we disconnect from that seed of light, that unique gift that we have and we're supposed to develop and contribute. We disconnect from it. And you begin to touch it again in moments. For instance, if you sing with other people, you begin to feel connection. How can you sing with a group of people and not feel the connection, not feel the grace that begins to move through you?
Yes.
Because that seed of light begins to shine inside you. You light up. And so many of us, as Andy was taught to pay attention and do his arithmetic, and was never helped to understand that the music in his mind was his gift, not a distraction, an attention deficit disorder. Well, it is an attention deficit disorder. It's the, but an attention deficit disorder on the part of all of us because we give our attention only to our deficits.
Well, let me put a thought out there for you, because this has been one of those areas that I've been looking into, because, you know, a lot of times, which most people don't really know this about me, but I'm always sharing about myself because
mm-hmm.
I love the format of this show because it's real. It has
yeah.
real volume to it. And I feel that that's why I have the listeners that I have, because they can really make that connection, and it's reachable to all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that, because that's what it's really all about, is touching people's lives.
Yes.
And one of my passions is children. You know, I am a mother myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed as I was communicating with people from all over the world, there was a real strong common denominator of what they were referring to within our society, a deficit with our children today.
Mm-hmm.
And is it truly a deficit? Or is it that our system, in some way or another, has stayed in such an old state of, or in the still in the box, that we haven't caught up with the way to educate them, to give their our children today the permission that there is nothing wrong with them. They just have a different way of expression.
Yeah, exactly. You're so right. The you know, what we're doing, particularly in the West, and particularly in the United States, is we're educating today's children by yesterday's standards for tomorrow's world. American education was developed to produce people that could work in factories making widgets. It was designed for the Industrial Revolution, when everybody would be stamping little things out on machines. And so the bells would ring, and then the machines would stop, and then people would go take a coffee break and then come back. So we were training people as if they were parts of a machine, and to all operate in the same standardized way. But that's not the world that we live in today, and it certainly is not the world our children are going to live in. The world our children are going to live in is going to require, I mean, our current world requires it, it's going to require two major things: the capacity to innovate, human ingenuity, and the capacity to connect in relationship, or else we won't survive. And those are the two things that are omitted from this curriculum that was developed so long ago for the Industrial Revolution. There's a time when my son, who's now 42, but I was teaching at Dartmouth College, and they had a big computer center, and David was 8 years old, and I found out that he wasn't going to classes, and the teachers called up, and they were very upset. And they said that he came in and took his test, and he did fine on his test, but he just never showed up for class. And since I dropped him off at school, I couldn't figure out where he went. And I said, David, why don't you go to class? And he had been working in the computer center after school, learning to write computer programs. And he said, because the teachers don't understand me. And I kind of rolled my eyes. He said, no, Mom, really, they keep asking me, you know, 8 times 2. They want the right answer. And I say to them, well, in what number system do you want the right answer? In the binary number system, or in another number system? Well, he had learned all that in the computer center, but the teachers at the time couldn't work a computer. They didn't even know what one was. So we assume that there is one standardized way, and if a child doesn't fit that standardized way, we assume there's something wrong with the child.
Absolutely.
And I can really get fired up about this.
So can I, let me tell you. Well, you know, it's really interesting, because what I was going to share a moment ago is that they're actual, you know, in Hawaii, we only have 13 letters within our alphabet.
Right, right.
And we pronounce our W's with the sound of a V instead of a W sound.
Right.
And so as I got introduced to a much larger alphabet, alphabet, there's actual letters within that particular alphabet that I can't hear.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I can't pronounce them for some reason. Mm-hmm. And it's so interesting because, you know, we had touched on this much earlier in the show, whereas many of our children today hear they learn through sound.
Yes.
And so I found some of the letters, it was like a void sound.
Yes, yes, yes. Now,
so I can't pronounce them.
One of the things that we know now that we didn't know when you were a girl was that if you teach children a language, to read and write and speak the language, before the age of 10, they will speak whatever language they learn when they're very young with no accent at all, because that part of their brain is so fertile and so fluid. But if you teach them after, they will always speak the language with an accent of some kind, because the brain starts like clay. It starts to harden. So why do we teach most children in schools other languages when they are in high school?
Amen on that one.
So what I'm saying is that your brain, had you been taught in whatever language it was, had you been exposed to it and gotten to play in it and hear stories in it and made up stories in all the different languages, you would have no problem. Your brain would be equally fluid.
Absolutely. And I found that, and it's absolute truth, because I was one of those particular individuals.
Yeah.
And as I, you know, was raising my own son, I saw that he had different areas as well that
yeah.
were very challenging for him.
Yeah.
And, you know, I found school extremely boring.
Yeah.
And it wasn't stimulating enough for me. And I'm an individual that needs a lot of a stimulation.
Yeah.
And so, you know, to support my son's education, I found creative ways to really give him that permission to express his own way, where he was
yes.
able to absorb the information.
Yes. Yes.
And, you know, I had taken French in high school. The first and only time that I ever failed within the school system is the French teacher actually asked me to leave the class because I was not speaking the language. Now, when I heard it, I was speaking it properly.
Right.
But she was so frustrated with
yeah.
me, she literally asked me to leave the
yeah.
class.
Yeah.
And I love the French language.
Right, right, right. So, you see, you know, one of the things my grandmother told me, which actually has helped a lot, is that where we are the most gifted is also where we will be the most challenged. And the reason that we're tested and challenged in our gift is to make our gift strong, to help our gift grow and be strong. And so here you are, a woman who is creating connections between tens of thousands of people who hear your voice. And yet you had these major wounds and challenges to using your voice and to speaking.
Yes,
and,
I did.
And what you've done with it is, you know, you've tempered it like steel. You've helped it to become strong. You didn't let it stop you. Part of why I wrote Spot of Grace was that there's a lot of research in what's called resilience. You're very resilient. You're a very resilient woman. You've created a very resilient child, I know. And people that are resilient, that can go through really hard times, one of the things that they found to be true of them, no matter how hard the times are that they go through, there was somebody that believed in them. There was somebody that recognized that they had a gift and communicated to them that they were unique and they were one of a kind and they had to work very hard to find their gift, but someday they would and they would share it with other people. That's what creates resilience.
Yes.
And so
oh
you are very resilient.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I am.
Yes.
Thank you for knowing
yes.
me so well. That
well,
is
thank
awesome.
You for not giving up.
Oh, let me tell you, there's been so many times.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you know what has kept, what's given me my strength
mm-hmm.
is when I would come across an individual and I was able to make a small difference.
Yes.
And that was just enough for me to draw upon to say, yes, I can do this.
That's right. That's exactly right. And now you know why I wrote the book. Because the stories in the book's divided into three sections. And the way that I came to divide it this way is I didn't know. I mean, I thought, well, maybe I'll take stories that are about fathers and stories about mothers. It didn't work. But I wrote a book, as you said, called I Will Not Die an Unlived Life. I think it was the second time I got cancer I wrote that book. And it came from a poem that I wrote, and the last two lines of the poem are, may I take that which came to me as seed and pass it on as blossom, and that which came to me as blossom and pass it to the next as fruit. So that poem is very important to me. I say it every morning and I say it every night. It's how I make sure that I'm living my life as deeply and as wide as I can. And the stories seem to naturally fall into three categories: seed, blossom, and fruit. And the stories that are in seed are stories about people where someone recognized their spot of grace. In some simple way, something recognized something in them that helped them touch that inside themselves. The stories in the section called Blossom are about stories of people like yourself who went through major challenges, but those challenges broke them open the way a seed, the shell around a seed, has to break it open for it to grow. And so it were these major break openings that those stories are about. And the last section...
I love you, Donna. I apologize. I just love...
Oh, don't ever apologize for saying I love you to me or anybody else, sweetheart.
please continue on.
The last section, fruit, are for people like yourself that have reached out to someone else because you recognized their gift and you wanted to support it somehow and you wanted them to know they had it and you wanted them to contribute it to the rest of us. So that's what that section of stories are about. And when I found that, it just satisfied me so deeply because it's natural, you know, it's in resonance with nature and the way things are. And we have a teacher in Kauai of a form called the Ki Aikido, which is a form of finding resonance between forces in opposition. And his name is Richard Kubayama, Sensei Richard Kubayama. He's been our teacher for almost 30 years. And he would always say, if something is in alignment with the laws of nature, you can know that it's a deep principle of life. And every time I have gone back to Hawaii, it's been to remember that again and again and again. So when these stories divided themselves so neatly into these three, into this natural principle of seed and blossom and fruit, I was very satisfied. And they are very simple stories.
Pardon? I have to thank you, Donna, for bringing a bit of home back to me.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you're aware I've missed home deeply.
Yeah.
And I miss that aloha. I miss,
yeah,
you know, and one of my messages since I've been on the radio is that we all have such true value, beauty,
mm-hmm,
and it's so important for all of us to break down those barriers or whatever that is. And just to love and support each other,
yes,
right now where we are, regardless of what's going on in our world.
Yes. You know, what I came to understand and why I talk as much as I do about Hawaii is when I got there, I had what I hadn't had really ever any place else. I knew that I belonged. Every place I went, even though I didn't know the names of any of the people, even though I couldn't speak pidgin, even though I couldn't walk and move and surf and do any of those things, I still had a sense in myself that I belonged, that I was part of a community. And I know that all the people in the world, particularly all the children in the world, would not fit on the Hawaiian Islands. However, what I've realized is that when people realize that they have a uniqueness, a gift, and that it is their responsibility to develop it, and even more, that the world, if it doesn't have the gift of Leilani, nobody else can bring the gift that only you can bring. And if we don't develop and contribute the gift that we have to bring, then the world will be bereft of that one special and unique gift. When you recognize that, you also recognize that you belong in the world.
Yes, 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 yes. Guess what, Donna?
What?
Let's invite our caller from Florida. Gracie, we'd like to welcome you to the Universal Spiritual Connection.
Hi, how you both doing?
Hi, Gracie.
Hi. I have a couple of questions, if I may ask.
Please.
There's a couple of areas that you kind of touched that affected me a little bit, you know, as a mm-hmm. child and growing up. When I was younger, I had a very hard time grasping, certain subjects in school. I think mostly in my junior high school year.
Mm-hmm.
And I was not really, really doing really well, and I wanted to, graduate. And, I had to really find a way, which I really did not have the love and support, you know, during
mm-hmm.
that time,
mm-hmm.
With family. So I had to find a kind of remedy, look forward to a way of trying, accomplish grasping subjects and things into the area where I was not doing well.
Yes.
I mean, it was very, quite difficult and everything, but I guess with, with the will of trying to work and complete what I wanted, I was a little bit successful as far as the educational area goes. But what I'm saying is when you're not comfortable or you're not aware of something, earlier, a feeling of belonging, into certain things and groups of things. How could you manifest the way to develop, a sense of, changing, that kind of approach and working with it? And how would you go about, working with it to achieve that goal?
Well, I have a guess about you, my friend from Florida. My guess is that you have a great deal of compassion, particularly for people when they struggle and have a hard time. Is that true?
Yes.
Yeah. You created that gift, or you grew that compassion inside yourself, because you went through all that hard time that you went through when you were lonely, when you were isolated, when you didn't have the kind of help that you want. And that compassion is a signal to your spot of grace. And you know when you're feeling compassion to somebody else and you want to reach out to them. And although you can't see yourself, my guess is whenever you want to reach out to somebody else and you let yourself do it, you light up. So there's a game we used to play as kids that's called hotter, 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 colder, colder, colder. Whenever you feel yourself lighting up, it's like hotter, hotter, hotter. All you need to do is do more of it. Somehow do more of it. And I don't know all the details of your life, and it's not mine to know. But when you feel that gift of compassion is yours to grow and yours to give to the rest of us, and you will understand people when they're struggling better than almost anybody else. And that's the marking places or the finger pointing in the direction that your path exists.
That's very true.
Yeah. And we need you.
Actually, I am an empathic channeler. At least 25, 27 years now, I have developed, the awareness in many different areas in different things.
Yeah.
I'm able to apply changes, healings, things into that area.
Right.
As you become gifted. But I really feel it was such a determination of wanting to help others. I feel that by that desire manifested where I am today.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You are a fierce and tender woman. And if you hadn't followed that desire and that will and that determination, then the gift, this empathic compassion that you have, would not be in the world today. And probably people told you when you were very young that you're too sensitive.
Yes.
Nonsense. That's nonsense. That was your gift. The seed of light that's inside of you, your gift, from the time that you were born. And fortunately, you stayed loyal. You let that sensitivity belong inside of you instead of making it an orphan or a refugee. You stayed loyal to it. And because you did, we have you as a gift, an empathic gift to the rest of us.
That's very interesting feedback. I never thought it upon, you know, I never, you know, thought upon that in that way, you know.
That's why we need each other, sweetheart.
Oh, well, thank you for the information. I really appreciate it.
I'm glad you're in the world.
Thank you, Gracie, and many blessings to you. Thank you for calling
in.
Bye-bye. I'd like to invite our next caller, Natasha from New York. Welcome to the Universal Spiritual Connection.
Hi, Natasha. Hi, how are you? Nice to speak with you.
We are great, and I trust you are.
Yes, you are.
Oh, great. I'm calling it.
Well, welcome.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having me. My question is that I have been going through quite a rough patch with someone who I love very much, and it's been quite rocky. It's been great, it's been wonderful, but it's been toxic for the past 2 years, and I'm wondering what the future may hold between him and I, short-term and long-term future. And I'm also wondering about financial questions as well, too.
Well, I'll speak to you from my experience, and hopefully it will be useful. I'll give you a practice, okay? And to give you a practice, I have to tell you the story about this teacher I had that I mentioned before, Sensei Richard Kubayama. And I would, once he was a little tiny, he is a very small, small man, very thin, and old, okay, very old. And he could have 12 people gather around him, big, strong men, all attacking him at the same time. And within seconds, they would crash into each other, and he would be standing, and nobody had ever touched him. And he said, I said, what do you call that, Sensei? And he said, it's a Rondori. And I said, a multiple attack. And I said, how do you do it, Sensei? And he said, well, I just noticed the spaces between the 12 people that are surrounding me instead of noticing the 12 people that are attacking me. And I kind of was like, wow. Did it take you a long time to learn to do that, Sensei? And he looked at me with the sweet brown eyes, and he said, oh, Donna, you don't understand. He said, I've never learned it. I just have practiced it. I've been practicing for 45 years. And I said, you've been practicing for 45 years and you haven't learned it? He said, it's like life. There is only practice. So I'm going to give you a practice, Natasha, to do in terms of this relationship and this love. Okay? I'm not going to tell you what's going to happen because I don't know what choices you're going to make. What I would like to ask you to do is to think about each talent that you know that you have, and to write them down on a piece of paper. Pick five. It doesn't matter. And if you think you don't have talents, think again. I mean, as our last caller, compassion is a talent. We don't tend to think of it that way, but it certainly is. Humor is a talent. Procedure, being very disciplined, that's a talent. So there's many, many talents we have that we don't even think about. So I'd like you to write down five. And then on another piece of paper, put each talent in a separate box in a circle. And this is your board of directors. This is your council. And in the center of the circle, write a question that comes from this problem that you're talking about in this relationship. And then on another piece of paper, let each talent write a response to you. So if one of your talents is compassion, let compassion speak to you in answer to that question. If one of your talents is storytelling, let storytelling speak to that question. So you will have advice and guidance from five different aspects of yourself. Most of us give to the rest of the world what we most need to be giving to ourselves. And so this is a practice of coming home to your own wisdom.
And also, so that, you know, I think for human survival and to reach nirvana or to reach the highest forms of elation is to be kind to yourself, to be, to treat yourself as number one and help others along the way as well, too. But sometimes our destiny, you know, they let our spiritual beliefs and our destiny could be one or could be so many more, you know.
Yeah.
It's just trying to find the balance and the moderation of, you know, the right choices to make or, you know, what to take time upon and
yeah.
what to leave behind.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think if it was my real true twin soulmate, you know, I wouldn't be even thinking about this question. I wouldn't even be thinking about, you know, the doubts and so forth. And,
yeah,
sometimes you need a reminder.
Yes,
just to help us along the way.
Yes, that's very true.
Yeah, so I guess I got that question off my mind. It's heart-wrenching, you know. It really is heart-wrenching. And
it is.
Another question,
too.
Have you heard about the Mayan calendar and how, you know, the predictions of 2012? And what do you think about that? Do you actually think that they may happen? Or, you know, it's quite scary.
Yeah, I have this kind of philosophy that carries me through. Cancer taught it to me. Cancer's been just an amazing teacher to me. And what I say to myself is, don't vote for it with your imagination. Because our imagination has a great capacity to help things manifest. So I am very careful what stories I tell myself. I'm very careful what I vote for. And I particularly am very careful of what curses I will support with my imagination. So if someone says, don't eat so much, you're going to get fat and nobody's going to want to be with you, that's a curse. My grandmother, on the other hand, used to bless my future. So my mother would bring me there and my mother would say, Donna never stops talking. She talks so much. Nobody's going to want to be her friend because she talks so much. And my grandmother would just nod. And when my mother would leave, my grandmother would say, she'd put one hand up to the sky and one hand on my forehead, and she'd say, God, I know Donna talks a lot, but someday people will love to listen to her talk and tell her stories. And those stories will help other people. So what my grandmother was doing was blessing my future. And I think we need to bless our own future and each other's futures. So each time you worry, whether it's about 2012 or whether it's about this relationship or whatever, it's just a curse that needs to be have its future blessed, you know. So it's like, well, I won't have enough money, and I don't know what will happen. And you go, I won't have enough money, but then I'll remember what my real wealth is, and then I will feel full and rich in my life. That's blessing your own future. So every worry needs to have a blessing at its end. And every prediction that's dire, we're going to be in war for 100 years, the world will end in 2012, whatever it is, my invitation is that you not vote for it with your imagination, but you bless a positive future. Because our children need you to do that.
It's like The Secret, that popular Logan movie that came out, you know, it's exactly, the mind can manifest, you know, anything, and you live in your own reality. And so what you create, you know, what one strives for is to create positivity and harmonious situations and peace and love and all of the good qualities that are, you know, that we all want and strive for. And I guess the problems that we experience are just worries and problems. And if they're all problems, then we have to find a resolution within ourselves to have a resolution and not invite problems or not invite any forms of bad influences or negativity or anything, and always trust in God and, you know, and network and communicate and share experiences. And I have to take my own advice.
Well, sweetheart, you know, you are human. And being human means that we're all imperfect and we're all imperfectly perfect. And I have met more people that cause themselves suffering because they cause themselves suffering. So you begin where you are.
I can't help it sometimes.
Exactly, because you're human. And so when you notice that you're doing it, then you need to bless your future by going, I just was hostile to myself. Someday I'll be truly kind to myself. Because then you're blessing yourself, right? Instead of cursing yourself and saying, what's the matter with me, the whole world, you know, why I'm creating a terrible reality. Then you're just cursing yourself again.
That's, I'm going to do that. I'm going to start blessing myself and others and be more positive. And then as soon as I have any doubts or fears or anxieties or anything that comes about, I'm going to remember you, Donna. And bless you as well, too. And, you know, peace and love. And that's what it's all about. And I'm so happy I called in and spoke with you.
Well, Natasha, you live in my heart. You live in my heart.
Okay. Have a great
night.
May
it be so.
Enjoy.
Blessings. You, Natasha, and thank you for calling in. That is the most profound wisdom I have ever had the honor to witness on my radio show.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, every one of my guests that I've been blessed to have on this show for the past 4 years, I have been truly, truly blessed. We have to say goodbye to you, Donna. And what I'd like to say to you is thank you for touching my heart in such a deep and profound way.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say this to you, how may I be of service to you? And I truly desire for you to come back and share a part of you with all of us. And it's been a true honor and a delight.
Wow.
On that note, I want to say many blessings to all of you, and remember, you are the power and the authority of you, your worlds, and activities. Goodbye to all of you.
Mahalo a huiho.
Same to you, hon. Blessings, Donna.
Yes, yes. And you live in my heart.
And you as well.
Thank you very much,
Donna.
Yes. Take care.
I love you.
Oh, and so well.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
One day God will show me what I need. Right now, I'm not so sure about myself. Will I ever turn and face myself and learn to fly? I've always heard that mirrors never lie, but that's not true, because I see a man but feel a child. There are some of us who can hear a voice inside, a truthful voice that says, yes, you were born to fly, you were born to fly. We were born to fly high. We were born to fly. So was I. I ask myself, what will I come to be? I have a choice now, so I guess it's up to me. Maybe I will make a difference in this world. Maybe I will teach another boy or another girl how to fly. Teach them all that they were born to fly. Then we were born to fly. So was I. But when you land,
when you live in a world that says you must be something other than what you are in a world that forgets people spawn the fly. We were born to fly. We were born to fly.